Well, we're going to get right down to work here, or up to work. That's the best. There are a certain number of things which you have been given, possibly as your technique of effort processing. Most of them are right, but one of them's wrong, and I'm going to cover that right away. Boys have got you squirreled up a little bit on ARC. Definitions being handed out on ARC is just between ourselves bunk. You see, ARC is still ARC. And don't doubt that for a minute. What happens is that ARC sags into belief as soon as the apparent absolute of a belief starts entering into ARC. There is unfluid understanding. And it doesn't become understanding at all, it becomes belief. Belief on the lower ranges to an organism which has to be in motion to support itself is, of course, apathy. Because belief is no motion, and ARC is motion. I'll make that much clearer to you. Don't start abandoning ARC just because it can sag into belief. I'm going to give you a very brief resume of the axioms themselves, give you a little bit higher level of initiation of these axioms than are given in the axioms themselves. Contained actually in a definition of Dianetics. Dianetics is a science of statics and motions pertaining to human thought and behavior. Statics and motions. Don't get so static that you ignore motions in Dianetics. And don't get into such furious motion that you ignore statics. The whole of the postulate of statics and motions has to do with the fact that the highest echelon, which is now contactable, has been an echelon which has been contactable in a nebulous sort of a way for a great many centuries. They've called it a number of things. All it is a static. It's a thing of no motion, and that's theta. The difference is we build a bridge to it. It doesn't make Dianetics a religion any more than it makes physics a religion, because physics starts with a static too. Here's a static. It's a very strange static. It's causative. It's a causative static. Now, one has the choice in this of being cause or effect, dead or in motion. In other words, you have a point from which motion is entered, handled, and controlled. And this point itself is not in motion. It's an anchor point. That point is belief, faith, or they've called it a thousand different things, calling it theta now, which is a mathematical symbol, not a new name for the human soul. So here you have a static point. When a person dies, he loses physical universe motion. He is therefore static. In order to go into motion again, he would have to become alive. Now, regardless of whether people die and come to life again, that's beside the point. The point is that there is an optimum motion as established by the band range of tolerance of the human body. Your heart beats, it's anywhere from 60 to 90 a minute. Your temperature hangs between 95 and 100. 101, 102 gives up much above that, and gets to be a rough deal. Just contact the effort there if you cough. Go ahead, contact the effort to cough. No, contact the effort to cough. Okay, when you have then a body which is alive, you have a body which should be moving somewhere in this rather narrow tolerance band. Man is on a terrifically small tolerance band. Actually, he goes up 3 or 4 miles and he's done for. He can't breathe. He goes down in the sea 2 feet and he can't breathe. He goes under the surface again, he's in a tolerance band as far as space on Earth is concerned. He has to get artificial thingamabobs and whatnots in order to exceed this tolerance band. Now, right on the surface of the Earth, it can't be too cold or too hot or he perishes. He's a delicate little microbe. 98.6 is what his temperature should stay at. His body, but not the causative force, but his body is a carbon-oxygen engine. Doesn't fit to say that because a person's a carbon-oxygen engine, there's nothing else there. Something like saying a railroad locomotive runs on steam. And then you forget the engineer. You don't have anything to do with the engineer. You point out to it and you say, you see, that runs all by itself. Now, that's the way the human body is. And if you just cut out the engineer occasionally, why, that steam engine runs better, and a lot of other odds and ends of strange conclusions that have been reached about it. To say a person is an engine is true only in the sense of his physical self. He is an engine in motion. He's a motor, engine, propulsion mechanism. He's a lot of things, but sitting along with that is what causes him to be an engine. On the physical universe, we have the science of physics, and physics tells you very adequately how this carbon-oxygen motor can work, but it can't build one. It's a very interesting motor. It's so fascinating that people haven't been able to get their attention off the drive wheels and things in order to take a look at what made it run. It's so fascinating to see a motor which repairs itself, which is self-determined, which has a lot of very interesting variations in it, and which produces biochemical products which are not duplicatable in the field of chemistry today by any other form or means, by any other means than employing life form themselves. Well, that's a very interesting thing. We can take a look at this carbon-oxygen motor and find out that it is in motion and that it has to sustain a certain optimum motion. You try to make the thing go too fast or you try to make it go too slow and it ceases to go into motion. It ceases to be motion. At that moment, it becomes static. It dies. Very simple. So that you've got a cycle going on there of causation, this causative force, theta. Causation starts in and you get something goes into motion. It follows this more or less optimum speed, and it goes along with an optimum speed for a while, and then it stops, and they bury it. That's no motion. So it goes from no motion to no motion, to a rather narrow tolerance band of a certain type of motion. Well, it's interesting that there are little gradient scales. Here we get gradient scales coming in. Very interesting that here we have the body objecting strenuously to either side of an optimum motion. It objects to motions which are too swift and motions which are too slow. both sides. And whenever the body is slowed down to a point where it is momentarily static, and by that I mean the heart skips a couple of beats and bloodstream doesn't pulse quite right, and the nerve energies don't channel in a line, and the alignment of the cells themselves is destroyed. The alignment of axioms and molecules inside the body is thrown out of kilter. In other words, you get a moment of stopped motion, which is not followed by death. Anytime you get one of these things, a person has come up against a static. And he will behave thereafter to avoid that static, either to attack it or get away from it or do something about it. But he'll do something about that static. He doesn't like that static. The worst thing that can happen to him is to stop altogether. So he fights any intermediate static. Any injury is a static. And he will also fight something which forces his heart up to 250 a minute or something like that. That also is starting to approach a static, because it'll go up just so fast and then stop. So he fights away from the upper and lower motion band and tries to stay in the middle of it and tries to stay in a tolerance level of operation. As long as he does this, he's alive. As long as the organism can continue to do this, it happens to be healthy. When it can't do this anymore, it ceases to be healthy. Now, the way that you train, quote, train, unquote, one of these organisms, is you beat it, and you put it in jail, and lock it up in closets, and you slow its motion down any way you can. And after a while, it gets obedient. Now, obedience is faith. It's belief. That's obedience. Motion slowed way down, or speeded way up. And when the organism falls over into either of these two statics, too fast or too slow as far as it's concerned, it goes into apathy and hands its own identity over to the counter effort which forced it to do so. Hence you get valences. That'll be much more clearly explained as we go along here. As long as this organism is moving within the tolerance band, it has understanding. Now, a stop or a threatened stop by too fast or too slow sets up a wave. At very least, it sets up a wave which is a noise type of wave rather than a, you know what a noise wave looks like. You could graph sudden halts or sudden propulsions of the organism as you would regard the jagged noise wave. But in the middle, between these two, you have a harmonic wave with a certain amount of randomity to it, a certain amount of variation to it. This certain amount of variation varies, but in that band we have affinity, communication, and reality. Only in that band. It's when affinity, communication, and reality fall off into the zero motion of a static that it becomes a belief, and at that moment the body ceases to operate properly, becomes sick. Invalidation and domination are only efforts to slow down or speed up the body. That's all. They all come into that category. People are running faster than others, so they try to speed up the people who are running slower. People who are running slower try to slow down faster ones, and so forth. Within the species, there is an effort then to control and keep going in optimum motion. So, people who are moving too fast get into conflict, people who are moving too slow, and you get a beat or a a noise level effect on your ARC, and they go out of communication and so forth with each other to some degree. They can't hook in on each other's wavelengths. But when ARC is deprived of motion, it can become belief. And what you are processing with effort processing is belief, not understanding, but belief. There's a cycle in progress whereby you get belief, understanding, belief, understanding, belief, understanding. That's a cycle. It goes like this. Lamp here is cause. Cause without effect. Greeks used to call this prime mover unmoved. This is cause without an effect. Rather weird sort of an idea, but actually, if you could just put this down as a philosophy of existence, I am going to live as a cause and not as an effect of my own causes. You'd be happy people if you could just do that. As a matter of fact, you can try to keep from being a cause affected by your own causes. When you self-determine non-survival activities, you are at that moment becoming an effect of your own causes. You postulate, you say, I am now going to, or from this moment on, I decide that. You know, like people are supposed to do every New Year's. Now, here he is as cause. He's postulating a cause. Now he steps forward in time and becomes the effect of his own cause. If you can just get up all the decisions anybody ever made about himself, you got a well man. Cause and effect. Here is cause without an effect, and then we have, below this, motion. Here's your initial motion. And then we have another static and a secondary motion. Now, as you go down the tone scale, you can plot this tone scale just this way. Statics. The church is quite correct in saying, above all is faith. That is one of the thousand various ways of saying that cause is cause and shouldn't be an effect of its own cause. Then they come down here and they say, and you've got to have faith. Oh, that's great, that is. That puts them into the position of being a causative agent and gives you to them as messed. Because they say, you've got to have faith. The joke's on them. You've got faith. Nobody can take that away from you. But they start telling you, you have to have it. And that says you haven't got it. And the second it says you haven't got it, you don't have it. It's one of the neatest little invalidation mechanisms known. This runs over into all fields of invalidation. You can extrapolate all invalidations from this. Here's the fellow, everybody likes him, he's cheerful, he's happy, and somebody comes along and says, you know, you should be careful the way you treat people, because I've heard lately, you've just got to be good to people, you've got to be kind to people. This fellow starts worrying, and he says, gee, I thought people liked me. He's made self-conscious at this moment. There's almost no limit to what a human being can do as long as he doesn't have this variety of stuff thrown at him in the guise of affinity, communication, and reality. People are postulating new realities for him. And every time he accepts one of these new realities, he's sort of sunk. But he's all right up until the moment he can have any God's quantity of n-grams or anything else. He's perfectly all right until he accepts one of these postulates that is handed to him. And adopts it to himself, and by his own self-determinism says, well, from here on, that's the way it is. That's a little boy suddenly saying to mama, all right, I give up. I'll mind. He goes out of valence. He ceases to be alive. He's hit a stack. He goes out of valence. And you can watch this either in your cells or in free clears. and his reality goes boom. Perceptics shut off. You want to start getting perceptics on, it's pretty clear. You want to find out the effort to believe. What is your effort to believe? You turn on somatics, face slaps, every other darn thing. The effort to believe, not the effort to agree, because he's not agreeing. He's just believing. He's a static state. All right, here he goes. Bang, out of valence. Off go the perceptics. Now, asking for his effort to believe Mama at this point. What is your effort to believe Mama at this point? Apathy. And all of a sudden, tail with her. Meow! You've got the effort. Now you want the effort not to believe Mama. You're busy, all brightness of the scene, a whole lot of recollections, and everything comes swarming in on him again. Oh, his childhood is blank. Everybody says this. My childhood is blank. It's just as blank as he has had to believe without understanding. You see, it's a sort of a slave state philosophy to tell people that they don't have understanding and that they must believe. That's great, because they have belief. What they have to acquire is understanding. The component parts of understanding are affinity, communication, and reality. The modus operandi of theta moving into the physical universe is an operandi of understanding. It unfortunately is accompanied by an enormous amount of force. And it hits a great many statics. Every time an organism dies, it is in a new static. As a consequence, it keeps coming down the tone scale. Statics, statics, statics. Now, all you've got to do to a human being is convince them that they have to believe. And if you just work on them hard and tell them they've got to believe, they've got to believe, they've got to believe, don't invite any understanding. And if they say, well, I don't see it, you say, well, I tell you, God is good, and we're going to kick your teeth in unless you believe it. And the fellow gets in a bad state right away, because he starts to sink down toward the static of a past injury. You see, now that has statics in it. So you force him into the static of belief. You forced him into this level of theta, and promptly you re-stimulate an old static. Now, you can demand a person into a severe illness by making them obey. You want to know why the childhood illnesses are so frequent? It's a direct index between the illnesses and childhood, which are long, arduous, and severe, and the amount of blind obedience which a child has to go through. Understanding is something else. Here you try to postulate something into the individual's sphere of experience, which he himself has observed. And from this sphere of experience, we now get new data. We ask him to compare data, so forth. There are two levels of training. One is to have a little child go into the room, knock over a vase. You knock his head off every time he knocks over a vase, so after a while he doesn't knock over vases, you think. Funny part of it is he'll keep on knocking over vases. Now, the other effort is to let him go on knocking over vases until he knocks his silly head off on one, and then he'll take a look at it and he'll say, look, it's the physical universe doing this to me. I evidently have to be a little slippier in the physical universe. On the matter of possessions, he goes around, he keeps destroying his possessions and destroying them and messing them up and misusing them. And then all of a sudden, one day, they're his possessions, you see. And one day he picks up something that he wanted and liked, and he finds out that he broke that too. And he says, that's so good. I guess I'll have to stop breaking my possessions. He's come to a conclusion now. He's postulated something that he should do. He promptly becomes affected by his own cause. Later on, you find him trying to take care of the weirdest things But at the same time, there is the operation of training. He hits a little static himself. So as long as he's got a self-determined operation going, his health stays up pretty good. But as soon as you give him a lot of statics, instead of training, instead of ARC, his health gets very, very bad. Very mysterious commodity, this ARC, in some respects. You've seen it derived. It's been derived in several places. It's based on the fact that the material universe is as it is because we agree it is. That's fact. We do. We agree it is, and we actually find out this is quite workable. Where you have agreement, you have reality. And where you don't have any agreement, you don't have a reality. Nothing gets constructed or comes into existence that is not agreed upon. Thee and me agree that there's a chair up there on the stage, and somebody comes in and he says it's a horse, and we promptly look at him and have him locked up or something of the sort. We probably wouldn't hear, we'd probably process him. But that's what would normally happen in the society. Here would be a level of disagreement. Disagreement is unreality. You can't have a communication without an affinity. You can't have any affinity without an agreement on something, and so it goes. Now, you can get a shadow of ARC by the creation of statics. Belief, 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 belief. You have to love Mama. You have to go on. Why? Because I say so. Great. Nice operation there, and it immediately starts the kid down on the dwindling spiral. But this is what you're processing out of people. You're processing beliefs out of them. Now, I don't want you to believe a single one of these axioms until you've looked it over, seen what you've seen in the physical universe. Otherwise, the same thing will happen here that happened in organized religion. We don't want anything to do with that. They come down here and they say, now you've got to have faith, and we're going to explain to you so you will understand. You might as well say, well, the reason why we have a can of lamp black here is because it's all full of white paint, but it's lamp black. Have faith, and now you understand why you have faith. People come along and they say, but I don't understand why it is that Mohammedanism and Buddhism and Christianity are so much alike, and yet they had all these fights. And he might as well save his breath. He's talking about faith, and there's no understanding on the subject required. That's that. Now, authoritarianism is a static. That's why it's not liked. Somebody comes along and he says, now you've got to believe so and so and so and so about this. And they say, why? Poor little kid in kindergarten. He says, but why do I have to believe this is the United States of America? Nobody takes him over to the window and says, hey, you see those trees and so forth out there? Well, that's land, and there's lots of land in the world, and here's a globe and so forth, and you can look it all up if you want to, but only one section of all this sphere is the United States. They say, well, you'd better believe and be quiet and go home, or something like that, or spat with a ruler. Right away, he's off. His understanding is undermined to the degree that authoritarianism is employed upon him. They can generally get as bad off even as a modern university student. I mean, it get that bad. You wouldn't believe it, but it would. I don't want you to be under any misapprehension, then, with regard to the ARC, and start thinking you have to process ARC out of people. Don't do that. What you want to do is process out statics. You can get them just as fast, by the way, as somebody going too fast. Somebody is flying through the air at such a terrific speed, and static is introduced. Actually, statics are introduced by monotonous conduct. It becomes the same thing, the same wave, the same wave, the same wave, until all of a sudden the whole time track doesn't appear that time is going by anymore. You've just got the same action in the same space, and the same action in the same space, so it all looks like the same time, so you get a static. That's why people get bored in life. Because that static, repeated static of the same motion looks like they're dead to that degree. No time is passing. They have to keep convincing themselves time is passing. Do it this way this time, and then that way this time, and then this way, and then, as long as it's a smooth wave, let's get some variation in it. You take the pilot who flies from Albuquerque to Los Angeles to Albuquerque to Los Angeles to Albuquerque to Los Angeles to Albuquerque to Los Angeles for about 10 years. He finally crashes. Why? He's dead. He's dead before he crashed because he's been doing a repetitive motion without enough variation for so long that he actually loses his skill. All right, let's start in here with that definition that Dianetics is a science of statics and motion. Two component parts of this science, the two aspects are static and motion. The two component parts are theta and mest. By theta, we mean a cause, energy, or whatever it is, which is impinged upon the physical universe. We get our first axiom that life is a, quote, energy, unquote, of peculiar and particular properties. And believe me, Bud, they're peculiar. Took a long time to drag them down. But the oddity is that right here at the beginning we have a static. Now this static is a true static. They don't have any true statics in physics. But in Dianetics, we have an actual true static. It doesn't have wavelength, so it's not in motion. It doesn't have weight. It doesn't have mass. It doesn't have length, breadth. None of these things. All it's got is a symbol. It is motionlessness. It's very difficult sometimes for a human being to conceive motionlessness merely because he doesn't want to look death in the eye. Death is motionlessness. But here is, nevertheless, an emanation point, a motionlessness, from which motion itself is attacked. Now, this is different than saying, and this was an old theory, that it is an emanation point of motion. That point we're not making. It's not an emanation point of motion. We don't have this tiny point of whatever it is and then have all motion of the physical universe emanating from it. That is an old, old theory. It's cracked and weather-beaten. It's in the days of Sir James Jean. He had some interesting ideas on this. It is a very old theory. I know of its being about 4,500 years of age anyway. You'll find it, and I think, in the second Vedic hymn. They postulate a static and then have motion proceeding from the static. Our thinking is different to this degree. We have a physical universe in chaotic motion, which exists, as far as we're concerned, interdependent only on theta for its life organisms, but independent utterly of theta as far as its motion is concerned. Perhaps theta and the physical universe both come from another dual source. Perhaps they're the same order of magnitude. Whatever they are, doesn't matter. It merely matters that the physical universe is in chaotic motion. But theta is a causative theta which impinges upon that physical universe. All the motion there is comes from the physical universe. But all the cause, so far as life there is, comes from theta. Second axiom is at least a portion of the, quote, energy, unquote, of life is impinged upon the physical universe. We could have a sort of a symbol here. You could envision theta as a small entity which is impinged or is trying to impinge itself on a larger. Let us say this is the physical universe. Here, this is mess. And this is theta. You're getting emergence of some sort. Theta seems to be making an encroachment upon the physical universe. Physical universe seems to be sort of non-causative, random, chaotic. And theta, oddly enough, has the property of animating and mobilizing it and bringing order into it. And you could see the incursion of theta at last becoming so that this is theta and this is the physical universe. A sort of emergence, at which time all theta would become as thoroughly static and chaotic and so forth as the physical universe. It's heading via motion into the static of complete order. All right. What else theta is doing, in what other direction, we know not what of, but we should not neglect to mention that it probably is doing something. There are probably infinities of universes. Theta is probably going in many directions. As far as we're concerned here on Earth, theta has certain aspects. It's doing certain things in a certain way. It might be doing other things in other ways in other universes. There is no point of impingement between theta and the physical universe for the excellent reason they do not have their space and time in common. But this does not say that theta does not have matter, energy, space, and time, since it does, of its own in some peculiar fashion. For instance, the matter of theta is a codified idea. We have theta matter lying out across this land in the form of a culture. It's quite solidified. It's definitely matter. Furthermore, an idea which is really collected and aligned, theta, has velocity and theta mass. An idea will go in accordance to its ratio to the amount of truth contained in it. Very interesting stuff there. A lot of rules, laws that can be worked out concerning it. Theta, as far as we're concerned then, is merely a causative static which depends for its motion upon the chaos in the physical universe.